Oi.
This is going to be the least interesting patron-only preamble ever.
That's just as well. I'm getting terrible noise from upstairs. Apparently, having a washing machine right above where I record is not the best idea.
Who knew?
Yeah. I am shocked. All right. Well, welcome back to another episode of Spam, Spam, Spam Humbug. This is the long lost, massively overdue episode 80 because we tried to record, oh gosh, pretty much every week, actually, since the last episode came out. We've tried to record and just one thing after another has led to it falling through. So, and even then, this could wind up being a really short recording because we've got a small cast and not everyone can stay for the whole duration. So we say hello tonight to Golden Flame Dragon.
Hello, everyone.
And also present and not lurking tonight, if I am correct, is Jelly Bear Dragon.
Good evening.
Hi.
Fantastic.
Absolutely. And of course, as always, this episode of Spam, Spam, Spam Humbug is brought to you by our Patreon backers. So thank you to everyone who supports the podcast and the Codex by that means. And especially a hearty thank you to our co-producers, Seth, Dominic, Chris, Violation, Adam, Avatars Radio, Eric, Thorwan, Pascal, Neil, Helgruff, Aaron, and the Hearth of Britannia, and Edward. We have actually a number of new dragons to say hello to as well. So on the Facebook group, we say hello to Brian, Zerius, Drew, Alex, Fabian, Phil, Igor, Ike, Ravita, Lee, Minnat, Adam, Craig, JD, Andrew, Lyra, Louis, Eugene, Michael, Jason, Walter, Dion, and Antonio. And on the Google Plus group, that was quite a number of people have joined the Facebook group over the last 3 weeks. So
yeah, that's a lot.
That is. And on Google Plus as well, we say hello to Lizzie and Adapt. And we also welcome a new dragon who's registered a name at udse.org, Brazen Dragon. Hello and welcome and Splut. So what are we talking about this week? Well, I made the mistake of reading a top 100 list at IGN, and I regret this decision profoundly. but then I made the mistake of also showing it to the Spam, Spam, Spam Humbug Discord channel, and some additional comments accrued or surrounding it, and that kind of made it inadvertently the topic for this week, which is good, because I mean, like, we can talk about it for a bit, and then Golden Flame, if you got to run, great. We'll wrap it up and call it a night. You know, I can't fault IGN's intro to the list. It's really the list itself that's more the issue. You know, like, as summaries of the genre and its legacy go, you can't really top, like, or you can't really ask for better. I mean, maybe you could, but this is still pretty good. And I quote, role-playing games have a long and fascinating history. From its humble tabletop origins, the RPG has grown and evolved over the years into the most dominant and ambitious game genre, boasting a catalog as critically acclaimed as it is diverse. The best RPGs embrace a rich storytelling tradition as well as deep and engaging gameplay to create universes that are as exciting to explore as they are thrilling to quest and do battle in. And we've sunk hundreds, sometimes even thousands of hours immersing ourselves in these incredible universes, whether that be stunning high fantasy kingdoms full of knights and dragons, exciting sci-fi realms brimming with possibilities, or even extraordinary versions of our own world. And then they had to go and ask this question, but which RPGs are the best? And, you know, they endeavored to create a list of the top 100 RPGs of all time. Now, right away, this always strikes me as a problematic position to take because I seem to recall that there are other RPGs still in development which have not yet come out.
of all time thus far.
Yes. So, you know, the top 100 RPGs of of the genre at present would be...
And I would be happier with them if their blurb had not... Rather than ending with, below are the top 100 RPGs of all time, if they had just changed one word to say, below are our top 100 RPGs of all time.
Yes.
I would be like, okay, I am on board with this. I am interested to see what you have to say.
Yes, the statement as written is entirely too authoritative. So.
Now, simultaneous with this, Game Informer also did a top 100 list. However, I don't subscribe to them, and so I haven't been able to look at it. But I had been hoping to compare and contrast, but I saw a little bit of their top three, and it was suitably interesting and yell-worthy. So I'll toss that out as becomes appropriate.
Yes, please do, because I haven't actually seen that one yet. I know they did publish a list, but yeah, it's mostly behind their paywall at the moment, or in the print edition.
Yeah.
Anyways, so for the purpose of their list, IGN defined a series of elements that a game necessarily had to incorporate in order to be, you know, classified as an RPG. There's another warning sign for you, because right away we're already on rocky ground. You know, the whole what is an RPG question is a question we have studiously avoided discussing in detail in now 80 episodes of this podcast, because that is a hole with no bottom. That said, the main elements that IGN focused on were story. Is it compelling, well-written, or uniquely told? Presentation. Is it sound, music, and or visual style particularly strong? Character progression. Is there satisfying decision-making when it comes to building a character, choosing a combat style, or making other decisions in the game world? Combat. Is it fun? Innovative? Does it ask the player to make interesting choices? And systems. Is there an interesting dynamic between its various meta system? So for the purpose of the list, they defined an RPG thusly. Persistent character progression, including player exposed stats, combat that is a significant part of the experiences, experience, choices and consequences, story, exploration, and character building and customization. So, now, I mean, to their credit, you know, I have to admit, this is something that struck me as, you know, just kind of becoming a thing. Because I think we've gotten to the point now, it's been long enough since we've had new entries in the Ultima series, that the presence, the contribution of Ultima to any of these lists basically reduces to three games. And it's pretty much always going to be the same three games. Ultima Underworld, Ultima 4, and Ultima 7. And even before I dive into the entries for each of these, I'm going to guess that, you know, Ultima Underworld is going to be praised for being a very forward-thinking game in terms of 3D engine, in terms of the dungeon crawling experience, in terms of its presentation of a world that was in some ways dynamic and interestingly populated, in which you didn't just have to kill everything. And, you know, also for just the very unique flavors of each of the different levels of the Abyss. Those are some things that they might possibly touch on. You know, I say that without having even read their review of it yet. Ultima 4 is probably going to be praised for de-emphasizing the whole dungeon crawl monster killing aspect in favor of storytelling and especially morality-driven gameplay. Ultima 7 is probably going to be praised for, you know, blowing the open world concept completely open for its high level of interactivity, for a good storyline that, you know, was also woven into this highly animated and populated and living and dynamic world. And you know what? Even if that is all they wrote about each of those three games, those would be perfectly fair ways to rank each of the games, because those are things that each of those games did. But it's just interesting that we do seem to have reached the point where those are the only three Ultimas you really ever see pop up on a list anymore. You know, no one is, I don't think anybody else is going to throw like Ultima 5 in there or Ultima 6 or even necessarily Ultima Online, despite its contribution to, I don't know, the entirety of the MMO genre. But
Runes of Virtue.
Ah, there you go. This is the top 100 Nintendo RPGs of all time. Have there
top
even
100 been? Game Boy RPGs.
Yeah. Why does this list only have 23 entries? Anyways. So, I don't know.
Well, how do you want to do this? Should we start at the bottom and just kind of dive through quickly and linger on ones that we have things to say about?
Sure. I mean, okay, like some of the top... Well, I mean, like, let's just start, yeah, right where they start. Like, they start with EverQuest, and fair enough. I mean, EverQuest was an impactful game. I guess it could go at number 100. I have to admit, I'm a little confused at the inclusion of Wizardry 8 versus, say, any of the other Wizardry games.
EverQuest, you know, okay, I will agree. I will be a, look a little askance at the idea that it counts as an RPG, but I consider it to be a perfectly defensible position to say that it might, while UO wouldn't. There at least was a little bit of attempt at storytelling, even if I'm not convinced that any choices have consequences in it, unless you count, say, whether or not you wipe to this stupid boss.
Well, the whole choice and consequence thing is kind of difficult to do in an MMO anyways, right? Because, you know, you want the choices to maybe be impactful for the individual player, but at the same time, you have to limit the ability of them to make choices that impact the entire world and the play experience for all other players.
Right. And therefore, I'm not convinced that many MMOs belong on this list.
Right.
I mean, what's interesting is in MMO space, those two things kind of seem to be at loggerheads. Like, I would argue that Ultima Online did allow you to make choices that impacted everybody else on the server, but the game itself did not attempt to tell much of a story.
True. And people trolled the heck out of other people because of their ability to impact the gameplay for other people.
You know, EVE Online is another one that follows in those general footsteps, whereas World of Warcraft is attempting to actually tell a story. I don't remember if they appear later in the list, but I'll be surprised if they don't.
Hmm. I think they do. Hang on here.
They're number five.
Yeah, they're number five.
And they, even with the phasing and everything, attempted to let you make at least some choices.
True.
That had an impact on how the world was at least presented to you.
Indeed. EverQuest, yeah. If you're going to put an MMO on this list, that's, you know, kind of going to serve as like the representative of the earliest days of MMOs, EverQuest isn't a bad choice. I mean, I'd probably prefer to see UO, but I can see why EverQuest was chosen because, let's face it, it was Evercrack. It was the game that really sort of took the MMO genre from what Ultima Online had made it and blew it up into something that was, you know, million selling plus.
Indeed.
So, I can see why EverQuest is there. I'm not figuring out why Wizardry 8 is there, you know.
I have not played any of the Wizardry games to completion.
I have finished Wizardry 7 3 times in my life. It is a hard slog of a game, but it is excellent. It is just awesome. It's like Might and Magic got all growed up, you know?
And, of course, it predates Might and Magic, but...
Yeah, but it's funny because, like, I remember playing the Might and Magic games, like World of Xeen and some of the other ones. Some I played with my friend next door back when I was a kid. Some I played on my own. Not that Might and Magic isn't fun, but it's very much, it's a lighter-hearted game, and it's... not without its difficulty, but it's still generally easier. Wizardry 7 is much more punishing overall, and long. And it has a very long story that it insists on telling you at length. But I'm just not seeing why Wizardry 8 is on this list and not, you know, any of the games that preceded it, when several of the games that preceded Wizardry 8 were, you know, more narratively complex, had deeper systems. Wizardry 8 was 3D, and I guess it kind of, you know, is noteworthy because it was one of the longest spans of time between you know, the
publications,
yeah, because it came out in the 2000s sometime, and I mean Wizardry 7 was 1992, so it was a long time coming.
2001, presumably, the sidebar says published 9 years after its predecessor.
Right. Yeah. So, anyways. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm baffled by that one. 98, Titan Quest. I can see that. Titan Quest is an interesting game. I mean, it's a riff on the Diablo formula, but it's a good riff on the Diablo formula. So, and I like to see it pop up on lists because Tibby worked on it. So, you know, points.
I'd forgotten that. Yeah, I haven't played that one or pretty much any Diablo clones or Diablo. So
I have it on my phone. It's pretty fun.
Oh, nice.
Yep. Fable 2. I never played Fable. I gather that people have, you know, enjoyed some of the entries in the series. So
yeah, I really don't know much about it. Kicks off with, it's safe to say Peter Molyneux's games often fail to live up to the hype he sparks for them. Thankfully, that wasn't the case with Fable 2. And I stop there and think, not according to everybody I know that played it.
Oh, really?
I mean, I know people that definitely enjoyed it, but it's possible that 97 is an appropriate place for it, but I'm not sure that it's the case that that it got any less excessive hype. But I don't know. It was a while ago, and I could be misremembering. And hey, I poked Bully on Facebook, and I have no idea if he saw it, but he showed up.
Hey, yeah, I'm here. Let me know if my mic's working because I played with my settings earlier.
Yeah, I can hear you. You good?
Lovely, lovely. Yeah, sorry I'm late.
It happens. You made this one, so there you go.
At least we're doing it after like 3 weeks or something.
Yeah, exactly. Gosh.
Anyway, I guess I'll listen for a moment and get caught up because I don't even know what you're talking about.
There's a link to the list in the show, in the channel, so just hop in. We're only at 97, 96 now, Torchlight 2.
Yeah, we're doing the IGN Top 100 RPGs list.
Yeah. Cool.
Torchlight, I can see why a Torchlight game is on this list. Torchlight is, you know, again, Diablo clone, but oh my gosh. Like, it's one of those games that you pick up and you start playing and what time is it again? Oh my gosh, where did those last 3 hours go? So
this is actually the first game on the list I've played.
Oh, nice. Yeah, Torchlight's good fun. Like, it's there's nothing particularly compelling about it except for just the fact that it completely nails the gameplay formula. They say as much actually right in the reviews. Like, this is the gameplay loop that Torchlight 2 completely nails. Hack through monsters, pick up the loot, equip high level gear, move on, do it again. There's a story. There is actually a bit of an editing toolkit actually that ships with Torchlight 2 as well, which is kind of fun to mess around with. But, you know, fundamentally, it's just good, solid game mechanics, very, very playable, you know, just and engrossing on that basis. It's not a particularly compelling story. It's just fun to play through the hordes of monsters that you throw yourself at. Now, we talked about Pillars of Eternity before, so it's nice to see that one make number 95 on the list. Especially because, you know, it's kind of a return to it. You know, I mean, what is Pillars of Eternity, right? It's a modern take on the Infinity Engine formula. So, like, they liken it to Baldur's Gate, and I guess that's a fairly fair comparison.
It's basically Baldur's Gate's, you know, grandkid.
Yeah. And I mean, like, you know, in terms of, I guess you could maybe argue that, you know, like, if you were looking for a pure RPG experience, this is the first one on this list that is, you know, really like a genuinely pure RPG type experience in the classic sense. It's not an ARPG, although there is combat in it, but, you know, it's very much more, everything is, you know, dependent on your stats, even the dialogue options in the game. So, you know, I have not finished it yet. I have to admit, I haven't actually managed to get through it. The pacing kind of trips me up sometimes. But, I mean, certainly for as much as I've stuck my toes in it, it's a heck of an example of the RPG format. So, you know,
It's good to see that on the list. I have a boxed copy at home because I backed it on Kickstarter and I had not had the time to play it yet. I've heard good things. I've heard that Tyranny, which I don't think appears on this list, it may be too new, is in many ways a improvement on Pillars of Eternity in pacing and balance.
Okay. I've heard good things about
either
Tyranny.
One, I recommend it. But certainly the Baldur's Gate style and formula is one that I love, so forward to getting the time to dive into Pillars of Eternity.
Definitely. 94. Has anyone played Front Mission 3? I have no idea what this game's about, except that it involves giant mechs.
Yeah, I actually have heard of it, though, of the vaguest of memories. That seemed, that might have been around like the PlayStation 1 PSX era.
Well, release date was 2000.
2000, okay.
Developed by Square.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, that's about it, man. But,
Well, apparently it's good enough to be on this list.
And it's cool. It says you can swap mech parts around. I have played what was it called? There was another mech game that was actually for PlayStation. There was a couple of them where you could do that. It was a little bit like Mech Warrior, but you could like basically build a mech from like a pre-existing batch of parts. So you could pretty much make whatever you wanted, make some weird looking stuff, you know, like tank tracks and things like that. So, and it's cool that it includes that. It's always nice when you can customize your character, not just with numbers, like in an RPG, like, ooh, I want a strength of 18 and an intelligence of 4, but when you can like physically swap visible components around. And
yeah, it's a different take on the idea of character customization beyond stats or, you know, ooh, slightly better armor.
Yeah, it's like jetpacks. I can fly, but only 10 feet because I'm too heavy. Oh, I got to take off this tank tracks. You know, it's that's a whole new dimension, which is cool.
Yeah, that'd be all right. Bard's Tale, number 93. So it's funny, you know, we go from like 2000 to 1985.
Yep. But obviously the list would be remiss in not including any of the Bard's Tale games.
No, that's very true. I mean... The fact that it's on the list means that, you know, someone actually did their homework for the list. Because, yeah, I mean, the Bard's Tale games are rightly classic.
Yeah, that one I actually did play a lot. The DOS version. I think it was 16-color EGA. And, yeah, I played Might and Magic and stuff before that. And it was a really, really good game. It was actually really hard.
RPGs of the day were kind of punishing.
Yeah, those mid-80s RPGs were not easy.
Yeah.
Since they're bothering to do, you know, like this 2, this 3, this 8, I'm a little surprised that the entry that makes the list is The Bard's Tale. Like, I get the feeling that they're kind of tossing the whole trilogy in at this spot, although they don't explicitly say that, because I don't think or expect 2 or 3 to make a separate appearance. But I certainly think 3 was the best game of the 3. So.
Interesting. I remember one of the things that set the Bard's Tale apart from other like first-person dungeon crawl type games is first you were in a town, so you were like outside, sort of. You know, you weren't underground. Also, when you walked, even though all the graphics were hand-drawn, when you walked, it had these like in-between frames on the buildings, so it actually moved forward smoothly. A little bit like the way like the Legend of Grimrock, which is way more modern, but the way it did it, but they were all hand-drawn. And also the enemies had animated portraits, which was really cool.
Nice.
I always thought the Bard's Tale, the first one, was actually easier than the other two because it was abusable. If you ground out your characters, you know, ultra-high levels, then you could rip through the entire endgame with no issues.
And, of course, it must be noted that the Bard's Tale, some of them take place in and around the town of Scarabray.
Yes. Sort of never quite fully explored potential overlap with Ultima there.
Well, you could import characters between them.
That's true. You could
maybe
do that.
It was some sort of liminal space in Scarabray.
Yeah, I think Scarabray has like some historical roots of some kind, I've heard.
It's a ruin in Scotland.
Yeah, it's okay. A real place.
A lot of people like the name.
And I got an interesting sort of, I guess, trivia item. Since I actually have the game, it didn't come in a box. It came in like one of those books, you know, like almost looked like a record would come in. But the interesting thing is it showed, as a lot of games did back in the day, it showed a photograph of the lead developer, and he was some buff dude in a muscle shirt. So he didn't look like a programmer at all, and it was just kind of surprising to see that. You probably know his name. I do not.
Crazy. I have an objection to number 92 on the list. Not that I object to Betrayal at Krondor being included on the list.
But
I've heard many good things.
Low?
Pardon?
But being this low?
I have two objections.
Okay.
One is, yes, where it is ranked on the list. 92 seems oddly low. But also, I have to... Okay. Drawing attention to the fact that Betrayal at Krondor was released in 1993, I'm not entirely sure where IGN gets off saying... Betrayal at Krondor is a first-person RPG that's surprisingly open world for a game of its vintage. I'm going to leave that one hanging there just for a little bit.
Yeah.
Especially when we get to Ultima 7, which is further down the list, admittedly.
It is.
But,
this is one that I had not played, and I bought it on GOG so that I can finally do so eventually, because I've heard really good things, and I did enjoy at least some of the Raymond Feist books that it is from.
I like their "did you know?" The initial release of Betrayal at Krondor came in a stack of 7 3.5-inch floppy disks, to which I say, only 7?
Yeah. Surface dial.
So, yeah, there's that. Freedom Force at 91, I've never even heard of. It was developed by Irrational Games, I guess, but I know nothing about it at all, except that there was a little comic book series. Divinity Original Sin coming in at 90, that's... not a bad spot for that game. I want to like it more than I do. I just can't quite help feeling a little tinge of disappointment every time I play it, because it's, you know, it's like, the day-night cycles, the NPC schedules, you know, just those extra little bits that could have made it an actual good Ultima 7 successor.
Right.
But,
well, what was bad is they had said they were going to do that, if I remember correctly. And then
they had to strip it out at the last minute.
So they should have just said nothing in the first place. You have to set people's expectations or they're going to be disappointed.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, with DOS 2, they definitely didn't even try to go that route. So, which I think worked out better for them overall. But yeah, it's just kind of like, But I mean, on the other hand, you know, like it's good to, you know, see the guy at IGN, Chris Reed, I think is the guy who wrote most of these. You know, write something like, most RPGs let you barge into people's homes and take their things without a word of complaint. Try that in Divinity Original Sin and you're likely to get yelled at or attacked. And it's like, yeah, I like seeing that back. I do, you know. Mm-hmm. NPCs that own stuff, that's a good thing. Dragon Age Inquisition at 89, okay, I guess. I haven't actually finished that game yet, so no comment on that one per se. But, certainly, I mean, that was an attempt to take Dragon Age kind of more open world, and I'm certainly in favor of that, although I hear mixed reviews as to whether they really succeeded with making it an open world title, right? Because, you know, like, there's open world, and then there's open world. There's, you know, an engaging, interactive, dynamic world that is fun to explore. And then there's, wow, there's just a lot of empty space here. Why do I have to cover all of this empty space? So I don't know which side of that line it falls on. I've heard people say it falls on both. So I guess I'll just have to get around to playing it at some point. Moving into the 80s, we've got Darkest Dungeon. My coworker is really a big fan of this one. He plays it a lot.
I know some real addicts, yeah.
Yeah. I've not picked it up myself, but I know that it's, you know, it's very, I want to say kind of roguelike-y in the sense that, you know, like randomness is a big part of it. It's kind of one of those games where you die more often than not.
Yeah, where we're getting to the end is a matter of having started the game a whole bunch so that you've eventually learned how to navigate the early and mid game successfully and efficiently.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is very roguelike.
Very true. At 87, East Book 1 and 2.
Yay.
Yay. Yeah, I figured you'd have something to say there. Now, is that really two games in one? Are they kind of cheating here?
Yeah, that's a weird thing. I'm actually not completely sure about that. They were one goes directly into the other. And I think most releases of it, they were packaged together. I don't know if there was like some ancient MSX version or whatever where they are actually released separately or not, but they're generally released together. They may as well be considered a single game. It pretty much plays out like that.
All right, fair enough.
And that's a good question. I would like to know for sure.
Now, yeah. Kingdom Hearts 2. I got it. Oh, sorry, Jellybear, did you have something to say there?
No, but I did.
Sorry, go on.
Anyway, if anyone's not familiar with the East series, it's spelled YS. It's Japanese. It's by a company called Falcom. It has just absolutely amazing music, pretty much all of the games, the third and fourth especially, for the PC Engine, Turbo Duo, whatever, because they had actual CD track music. So if you like the anime-style Japanese animation, action RPGs, you'll super dig the East games. They're fantastic.
Yeah, because it's got, you know, JRPG type combat, and I guess the cutscenes are really, really good too. So,
yes, they were.
Cool. 86 Kingdom Hearts 2. I guess. I mean, I like the Kingdom Hearts games, but it's kind of like when I have people from, you know, Disney lining up against, you know, an assortment of JRPG characters. It's kind of like, I don't really think of this as, I mean, I guess it's an RPG, but it's just, I don't know. I like it, but I just don't understand its inclusion on this particular list.
It's a dramatically strange premise for a game, but, you know, once you get past where everything's from and just kind of take things superficially, yeah, I can see why it's here.
All right, fair enough. Moving on, Chrono Cross at 85. So, kind of a follow-up to Chrono Trigger, which we'll come back to later.
Much later, as it happens.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. Apparently a very serviceable follow-up to Chrono Trigger. So, all right, good, great. Dragon Warrior 7 at number 84. The Dragon Warrior games is one that I've not gotten particularly heavily into, except, you know, from a matter of pure historical interest, because, of course, I think the first Dragon Warrior game owes some small creative debt to Ultima.
Yeah, the first one was really good. That's the only one I played. Dragon Quest in Japan, Dragon Warrior, I guess, North American market.
Right, fair enough.
Nice. Great music. The composer was inspired by Baroque classical music. So if you like Baroque music, you will absolutely love the music to the Dragon Quest / Warrior games. You can also find a lot of symphonic performances of the music that are equally fantastic.
Cool. Good to know. Coming in at 83, Final Fantasy. Guess you can't really fault that. You got to have Final Fantasy on a list of RPGs because there have been several excellent entries in that particular series. Don't usually see callbacks to the very first game in the series, though. That's a little bit different.
Yeah, given that other entries in the series do appear later in this list, I am a little giving them a little bit of side eye for including this one on the list, evidently just because it kicked off the series.
It does kind of feel that way, doesn't it?
Because they did not afford that particular, you know, luxury to pretty much any other long-running series. So,
Very true.
Yeah, that's always a problem with a top 50, 100, whatever list when you have a game that has like 10 iterations, 15 iterations, or whatever, and some of them are like almost equally good. Do you just lock out a bunch of other games for not being quite as good and include all the ones of a different series, like part 1, 2, 3, 4 and so forth? So they have to find some kind of balance somewhere, and I guess just make some subjective choices. But it's good to see the first one in there because I loved it. Also great music in the whole series, at least up until he quit. Nobuo Uematsu, he stopped making music from at some point, but by all the soundtracks, they're awesome.
Definitely. All right. Well, 82. First Ultima Underworld, the Stygian Abyss. This is worth reading. Quote, if you thought Bioshock was the first game set in a failed utopia below water level, you'd be wrong. Ultima Underworld, the Stygian Abyss has it beat by over 20 years. In this pioneering first-person RPG, you explore a sprawling dungeon using free movement rather than the grid-based system that was common at the time. You can gather useful items, pick your responses during conversations, and power up your character in a staggering number of ways. As you explore the ruins, the music shifts on the fly to match whatever tone your adventuring takes on. If you're looking for a game that was way ahead of its time, you've found it. And some of the did-you-knows are also worth mentioning. This Stygian Abyss is one of the earliest first-person 3D RPGs. It's one of the earliest 3D, first-person 3D games, really. At least, you know, that wasn't just using a line art type engine. It was also one of the first games to earn the label Immersive Sim. Later games that were influenced by Ultima Underworld include Deus Ex, System Shock, and The Elder Scrolls. And also Bioshock. It's kind of funny that they left Bioshock off the list of games influenced by it, but they started their description of it by talking about Bioshock. But anyways, there actually a lot of the people...
that was implied by System Shock.
I suppose so, yeah. But I don't know. How many people actually know about the System Shock-Bioshock connection these days?
Well, it's shocking.
Yeah, very true. I mean, a lot of the people who worked on the game went on to contribute to, well, System Shock, and even some of the people from Looking Glass ended up at Irrational Games working on Bioshock. So, Looking Glass was one of those incubator studios that, you know, it's like you look at all the talent, you look at the pool of talent they had, and then you start looking around at other gaming studios these days, and you're just like, oh yeah, him and that guy's from Looking Glass too, and it's just, yeah, it's funny.
Yeah, I think Ultima Underworld might be like the most groundbreaking game of all time. I can't think of anything else that made so many improvements over anything else that had ever been done, like all together in one game. You know, mixing traditional RPG elements with like the cutting edge technology, 3D real time. You know, exploration, like everything else after that seemed iterative. Like you would just slightly improve something. I don't know. Can you guys think of like any other game that changed so much at once?
Probably, if I really put my head to it. But it's funny you mention the whole, you know, iterative and improvement, because that's not actually quite what happened. You know, Ultima Underworld came out, and then a few months later, because, of course, at the time, John Romero was working at Origin. And so John Carmack got a look at early builds. Because, you know, I mean, Romero and Carmack were buddies. John Carmack got a look at some early builds of Ultima Underworld. And he thought he could build a faster renderer. So he set out to do just that. And, of course, we know what the result of that was, Wolfenstein 3D. But... And I mean, Wolfenstein 3D really came to, you know, then become the gold standard of 3D first-person games going forward. And then, you know, followed up by Doom and Quake. And id Software really just kind of became synonymous with first-person 3D games. And I've always been slightly annoyed by that because, you know, if you look at what Ultima Underworld's engine was capable of, sure, it was a lot slower. It was definitely not as peppy and it was harder to run on, you know, middling hardware than Wolfenstein was. But in terms of what it was capable of versus what the Wolfenstein engine was capable of, I mean, there was no comparison there. It was far more advanced. And I really think 3D technology took a couple of steps backwards by the mainstreaming of Wolfenstein 3D. I maintain that to this day. We actually wound up getting set back technologically because Wolfenstein took off where Underworld didn't.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you know, in food terms, you know, like Ultima Underworld, you know, be like a 5-course meal by a top chef, you know, and Wolfenstein 3D would just be like a bowl full of sugar. Yeah, it's really good, but it's
McDonald's
very
cheeseburger.
Simple. Yeah, it was so simple. There wasn't much to it, but it was just very enjoyable, perhaps because of its simplicity and because it ran so well on so many different low-end machines.
Yeah, maybe that was it. I don't know. It just annoys me to this day. I'm feeling like we should maybe accelerate through the list a little bit here, so let's see what else we got. Jump in if you have any comments, but I'm just going to start reading off titles. You got EVE Online at 81, and we talked a little bit about that already. Mario and Luigi.
Not very much story in there, except what's made by the people there, which, again, it shared with UO.
Right. Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga. Apparently, Game Boy Advance. Star Ocean, the second story at number 79. Illusion of Gaia at 78. Valkyria Chronicles at 77. I have heard of this one. Heard some good things about that one.
Yeah, I've heard good things about Star Ocean and Illusion of Gaia, but I haven't played them. Valkyria Chronicles, I've watched a friend of mine play through, and while, yeah, it's interesting to think RPG when the game is about driving tanks around, that, you know, doesn't seem to work, but somehow it kind of does.
All right.
Yeah, we need Grithia up in here. Because yeah, he would be all over some of these JRPGs.
That's the other thing, too. Like, the list seems to have a fair bit of JRPG content to it. And then, not that that's a bad thing. I mean, obviously, that is certainly one of the branches of the RPG genre. But it's, you know, it's not one that I have a great deal of exposure to. So, yeah, I'm just kind of like, okay, well, that's on the list. And I seem to recall hearing other people speak favorably of it. So, great, good. Icewind Dale 2 at number 76. I got to admit, I'm glad this one is on the list, but I'm also baffled as to why it's on the list, because the Icewind Dale games were, like, I mean, if you think about the small stable of games that was built on the Infinity Engine, right? You've got your Baldur's Gate, Baldur's Gate 2, Planescape Torment, and then you've got the Icewind Dales. And the Icewind Dale games are, in terms of story, far less sophisticated. They're the action RPGs in the series. So it's kind of weird to see Icewind Dale 2 in particular show up on this list. Although I have to admit I am glad, because this was the last game created with the Infinity Engine, and it's the only Infinity Engine game I can stand to play for any length of time.
And it is the only one that made the jump to third edition D&D for its rule set and away from the second edition that the Baldur's Gates and Icewind Dale 1 used.
I wonder if that contributed to my enjoyment of it. I'd have to look into that. Legend of Dragoon at 75. Disgaea, Hour of Darkness at 74. I hope another I pronounced that correctly.
I have heard a lot about.
Yes, heard a lot, not played. The Witcher 2, Assassins of Kings at number 73. Now, it's a pity Rustic wasn't in here, because I know he tried to play this and he just had to tap out at some point. I've not gotten into it myself.
It's another one where, you know, I have the series in Steam and we'll have to play through it eventually.
Indeed. Neverwinter Nights 2. Now, I have a comment about this one, because, like, Neverwinter Nights 2 is an odd one to try and rank on the list, and maybe that's why it's sitting at 76. Because 72. Because, like, on the one hand, the base game for Neverwinter Nights 2 is much like the base game for actually pretty much all of the game, the base game and the expansions for Neverwinter Nights. The base game for Neverwinter Nights 2 is kind of a plodding bore. There's not anything particularly remarkable about it. That said, Mask of the Betrayer, the first expansion pack for it, is amazing. It is seriously one of the best RPG experiences going. So, you know, I wonder if maybe that contributed to where it ranks on the list. Neverwinter Nights 2 was, of course, another one of those games. I mean, this happened with KOTOR as well, where BioWare did the first game, Obsidian did the follow-up. And, you know, as you might expect, Neverwinter Nights 2 is very much an Obsidian game. And Mask of the Betrayer, that first expansion, was just seriously, seriously excellent. Funny story about Mask of the Betrayer, actually. My wife, then my girlfriend, so, you know, this being a few years ago, wanted to get me a present for my birthday. So I opened the present on my birthday, and it was Mask of the Betrayer. Now, of course, at the time, I didn't actually own Neverwinter Nights 2, so she didn't find out until about a year and a half later that, you know, I had then surreptitiously gone out and bought Neverwinter Nights 2 without her knowing, just so I could play the gift that she had got me. But I mean, I was very, very grateful for it, because I don't think I'd have really gravitated towards it otherwise. And I was very, very impressed with Mask. So
that is funny. That same thing happened to me. I think it was with some expansion for like Baldur's Gate or Baldur's Gate 2 or something. Might have been like Asheron's Call. I cannot remember, but it required the original game, which I didn't have. I was like, damn it.
Yep. Let's see. Number 71, Jade Empire. Can't really fault that one's inclusion on the list.
No.
Fire Emblem Awakening, Odin Sphere, Life Thrasir. I probably butchered that. Undertale. Golden Flame, you had some comments about Undertale coming in at number 68 here.
I was interested because you read at the beginning of this the list of criteria for what makes an RPG, and as I was reading through them, I was most of the way through and thinking that I was going to be surprised if they were going to include something like Undertale, and then got to the last one and said, oh, this is the one that rules out Undertale, because it was character changes in customization.
Right.
Which by and large doesn't exist in Undertale, but despite it not quite fitting the criteria that they offered, here it is. It's an absolutely amazing game. Everyone should play it. It doesn't actually take a huge amount of time. The music is fantastic. The story is good. It's funny. And it very, very much plays with tropes and knowledge that it is a video game in ways that we will see as we, it's similar to things that I will have to say when we get to each of BioShock and Planescape Torment, in this case, playing with what it means to be in a world where someone has the power to save and reload.
Ah, nice. Well, I might like it then. I always like trope subversion.
If you like trope subversion, then it is a really good game for that. However, fundamentally at its core, like the engine, it's a bullet hell game, not really an RPG.
Ah, fair enough.
But it's a really fun one.
All right, then. Let's see. Number 67, Ni No Kuni, Wrath of the White Witch. Pool of Radiance at 66.
And here we are again with them just kind of putting the first game in a series and to kind of stand in for the series like they did with Baldur's, or with The Bard's Tale.
Right.
Because I am not sure whether I think Pool of Radiance is actually the best of the games in the series. Although I think it's the only one that I've actually made it to the end of, unless you count Hillsfar. But it's certainly the gold box games as a thing certainly belong on the list. I think judging from what I've like read other people say, in general, I would guess that something like maybe Champions of Kryn, or if you count it in the same collection, the Dark Sun game, are probably the best games that are this style of game. I don't know if Dark Sun appears later, but I'm pretty sure nothing else in the SSI series appears. So,
no, it looks like they got Dark Souls, but not Dark Sun.
Very different.
Yeah, just a little bit. Just a little bit. All right, what do they have next? Oh, they have another Dragon Quest game next. So we went from Dragon Quest VII to Dragon Quest VIII, Journey of the Cursed King. And then one that I have never heard of at 64, Lunar, Eternal Blue.
I know people that are very into the Lunar series about it.
Okay, well, that's good to know. Sega CD, apparently.
Yeah, it's a JRPG, really good music. It was also done by Takeshi Miyagi, who also did Silphid.
Oh, okay. See, I like having you on the podcast because it's just invariably you know the music.
Right. Yeah, and some other weird-ass crap that no one cares about, but that's okay. Better than Dead Air.
There you go. 63, Phantasy Star Online. 62, Breath of Fire 3, another one that I've never actually heard of. Oh, another Lunar game coming in at 61, Silver Star Story. Shining Force 2 at number 60. Golden Sun, 59. Lufia 2, Rise of the Sinistrals at 58. And Tales of Vesperia at 57. So quite a few JRPGs in that last little run there.
We're in the sea of JRPGs.
Yeah. Super Mario RPG, Legend of the Seven Stars. Oh my gosh, I never played that one. Shadow Hearts Covenant. 55. The World Ends With You at 54. I've heard a few things about this, but don't know much about it. Mm-hmm. Phantasy Star 4 at number 53.
I was doing some Sega Genesis testing. I won't get into all that, but anyway, I played a little bit of Phantasy Star 4. And from what I can tell, it looks absolutely fantastic. Top-notch production values. And again, awesome music. Truly, truly awesome music. But I actually am considering playing it through. Which I don't know if you know anything about my game-playing habits, but that's fairly significant.
Here's an interesting did you know. The American instruction manual for the game references more combo attacks than have actually been discovered, sparking a decades-long hunt for a 15th combo.
Damn. Trolls.
Typos, man. Typos. All right. Coming into 52, Final Fantasy VII. Another one, really hard to fault its inclusion on the list. The only quibble is where it ranks on the list. Because, I mean, like, this was such a definitional game.
Yeah, that was the first Final Fantasy that was actually polygonal. Used like a combination of 2D and 3D graphics. It was also the first one to use a CD-based system since it came out on PlayStation. And 1-6, of course, were the NES and SNES. So, and then it had that epic, I'm not going to spoil anything, but there was a certain epic part where somebody died and it was very sad and everybody fell on their sword and cried and jumped out the windows, you know. And
yeah. All that.
So, yes, like, well, the older games were great, but this was the one that pretty much, like, slapped everyone in the face and was like, this is Final Fantasy, pay attention.
Gotcha. Let's see. 51, Stardew Valley.
Not a game I had ever really thought of as an RPG.
Yeah, it always struck me as like a farming simulator with a little bit of extra stuff thrown in.
Yeah, and the whole Harvest Moon, Animal Crossing, it seemed to always seemed to me to be kind of more in the Sims category than RPG. But on the other hand, given their rules for RPG, I'm hard-pressed to say that the Sims can't, qualify.
Is there combat in Stardew Valley?
Oof, I don't know. I don't think so. In fact, they note in the Did You Know that you can't even slaughter animals for because the sole developer is a vegetarian.
Huh. I would have to wonder then. Now, you made a comment earlier about, you know, tyranny being not included on this list, and you're right, I don't think it is. You had made the comment about it being not included on the list because it's too recent.
And yet
here we are at entry 50, and it's 2017's Persona 5. Now, I've heard a lot of good things about Persona 5. You know, actually, just about the Persona series in general, but in particular, this, you know, latest iteration of it.
I have not managed to play it yet. My housemate is the one who bought the PlayStation 4 specifically so we could play it, and he has not yet finished his playthrough.
Gotcha.
So I don't get PS4 time yet. And when I do, it's going to have, you know, it's going to be some competition between this and Horizon Zero Dawn.
Oh gosh, I want to check that out so badly.
But I do hear good things about it. This is another series where I'm not sure that as many of it as do appear necessarily needed to appear, but I think they're in the right order.
Fair enough.
Let's put it that way. There was some backsliding in Persona 5 as far as being good about, like, gender and homo versus heterosexual. I don't say versus, but, like, their treatment of... Persona 4 made a lot of people happy because of a couple of characters and their presentation and... more respectful treatment of matters of gender, and Persona 5 evidently backslid in a major way, which has caused some people I know to just nope out on it. But
yeah, because it's apparently like a high school romance story fundamentally that just also happens to have like demon hunting and dungeon crawling and turn-based combat.
That's true for the series as a whole, at least 3 through 5.
Oh, okay. Good to know.
Either played or know something about. They're all the go to school save the world genre, as it were.
Interesting. Let's see.
Mechanics evidently were iterated in a very good direction. They took some of the stuff, some of the ideas that they had moved into Persona 4 Golden from Persona 4, a couple of changes made there, they decided were good ideas and kept, and just, yeah, a number of things. Some of the boss fights are evidently not necessarily tuned super well, but a lot of the systems and such are iterated from the previous installment.
Nice.
Move on from there.
All right. Where are we going from here? 49, Xenoblade Chronicles. 48, Dragon Age Origins. Again, hard to kind of fault that one's inclusion on the list.
I have one comment about Xenoblade Chronicles, which I haven't played, but I did just read the description of. It says that it had a day-night cycle, and that enemies grew stronger after the sun went down.
Ooh. Well, that sounds fun.
Yeah, it's interesting because I was one of the few people, apparently, that really, really loved Castlevania 2. And holy crap, it had a day-night cycle. And at night, you had different enemies, and they were stronger. 1987.
Ah. There you go. This one's also maybe up your alley. Toss in a stellar soundtrack, and that's a recipe for a game that should be popular for years to come. You might have to check that music out, my man.
Yeah, which one? That was
Xenoblade. Xenoblade Chronicles. The review here talks up the soundtrack.
Very nice.
We'll six different composers worked on the soundtrack. My goodness. Things you didn't know until now. Anyways, where were we? Dragon Age Origins at 48. It's the RPG-iest of the Dragon Age series. And I mean, it's a really, apart from the fact that it has that clunky Aurora engine combat, it's a really darn good game. It really is. You know, the setting is dark fantasy, but not like too dark fantasy. It's more Tolkien-esque than Game of Thrones. And it's just so richly populated with characters. And the story is really well told. So, I mean, wonderful, wonderful, enjoyable game to play. If you can get past the fact that the combat is so clunky that you can practically see the dice rolling.
Well, I have another complaint about it. And
go on.
It actually applies for all the Elder Scrolls games as well.
All right. Which we've not had any on this list yet. That's interesting.
I'm a completionist, so I do every little side quest and explore everything I can. So almost every time you were offered a task, it was always, oh, you mean this thing here? Here it is. Yeah, so it took some of the story out of it because I already had the quest completed.
Ah, fair enough. Yeah, because, yeah, you would have tripped over. But, you know, it's good that the game was, in a way, though, it's, I think of it as being a net positive that the game's architected in that way, right? Where you can inadvertently stumble to the end of the quest before you meet the quest giver. You know, like, that shows that the game actually does accommodate different play styles. You know, it's much more annoying to me when I'm going through a game and, you know, someone's just like, oh yeah, I need you to go do this thing for me. And it's just like, okay, well, where is it? Okay, really? Because I was just through there and there was nothing.
Yeah.
I think there were some issues like that in Ultima where you need to learn the Word of Power or whatever to open the dungeon and you can just go up and open it. But I think that's how it worked. But imagine a game where you already knew everything and you tried to do it and it didn't let you. Like it says, you don't know that yet. And you're like, but I do know that. No, you don't. You haven't talked to this guy in the first town. It would get ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and the thing was, like in the Ultima games, for the most part, unless they specifically put a flag in the use code, with the earlier Ultima games, you know, if you happen to know the Word of Power, you could just walk up to the dungeon and be just like, hey, here's the Word of Power. And in you go. With Ultima 7, that went away because, of course, it was now entirely keyword-driven and everything was logic-controlled. So unless you had actually met the NPC that gives you the phrase that you need to say, that phrase is not going to show up in the list of keywords that you can put in. Anyways.
For more details on this, see our previous podcasts on conversation systems.
Yes, exactly. All right, moving on. 47, Shin Megami Tensei Persona 3. Aha, another Persona game. And I didn't actually know that it and Shin Megami Tensei were linked, but now
they are not not entirely the same world, but there's a lot of things that are similar between them, and it's the same developers.
Okay, good to know. 46, Grandia 2, I almost said three there. Grandia 2.
Yeah, Grandia or Grandia, whatever. That was also Game Arts who did the Lunar series of games. And
so right. Demon Souls at number 45, which is kind of the progenitor of the Dark Souls games. Xena Gears at number 44. Tales of Symphonia at 43. Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines. I've always thought that game has like just the most cumbersome title imaginable. Because it's like we have a subtitle and then a sub-subtitle. It's like Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines.
It's Part true. Two. It's very unfortunate. The game kind of didn't get finished.
Oh.
And, in ways that we may be able to sympathize with. But if you manage to apply, I think there's some fan patches such that try to rescue the game from the mess of a state that it was left in. It's evidently kind of really amazing.
Huh.
My roommate is every now and then, delves in and plays it, and it's just what it tried to do, it did really, really well. So I don't know what you need to go through to get a version that's worth playing. But evidently it can be done, and you still have to kind of step around some glitch potholes, as it were. But a surprisingly good game from a company that unfortunately went out of business.
Yeah, Troika went out of business just like a couple of months after the games came out. And interesting here, another footnote too, is that, in addition to restoring lost content in the game, the modders were also able to activate the multiplayer mode. Interesting.
Yes.
Let's see, 41, Skies of Arcadia. Have not heard. Final Fantasy IX at number 40.
Marking the third.
Yes.
Here, for those who are keeping count.
Let's see. Ogre Battle, The March of the Black Queen at number 39.
Only one subtitle, but still somewhat cumbersome.
Yes, a little bit. Fallout. You know what? Fallout at number 38 is, I think, something I can look at and say, I'm actually satisfied with that ranking. Like, that's mm-hmm. good. That's about where on the list this game should be.
Yeah, the original Fallout is more important for what it did to its genre than as an eminently playable game now, though it still is a playable game now.
Yep. Because, it was kind of just a really nice shift. It came out at about the same time as, a lot of other fantasy games. It came out kind of just as the Infinity Engine games were getting kicked off as well. And it went in a completely different direction, And you have to appreciate the design of Fallout, just that beautiful aesthetic. Because what was the conceit? It was like, it was our world, but if the transistor hadn't been invented, so everything is like trying to figure out how, so all of its setting is like trying to figure out how various bits of futuristic stuff that, would have been invented, but using vacuum tubes and,
right.
Yeah.
And basically kicked off the post-apocalyptic setting in the genre.
Well, it didn't. I mean, it wasn't the first. Like, Wasteland was the first. But Fallout took what Wasteland had done and, much the same as, we talked about with EverQuest, right? Like, it wasn't the first MMORPG, but it was the first MMORPG that, took the genre in its fledgling form and made it a million-selling thing.
Precisely.
And followed much the same thing. It took what Wasteland had done and just blew it wide open to a much larger market. Fire Emblem at number 37. And I suspect that this one may also be following the pattern of being included on the list, not so much for its own merits, but because of the series that followed. Neverwinter Nights. We've already had Neverwinter Nights 2, so now we have Neverwinter Nights coming at number 36. And let's see what they write about this. Okay, Deadly Plague, Nefarious Cult, Jeremy Sewell soundtrack, fair enough. But here we go, yes. But it's the dungeon tools for level creation that make Neverwinter Nights so influential and memorable, as they almost flawlessly allowed players to create their own dungeons and campaigns according to the pen and paper rules of Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. That was impressive in and of itself. But the inclusion of an excellent multiplayer system helped make Neverwinter Nights a smash hit. I kind of figured that was why the game was included, but I just wanted to see that they had written it.
I have one more reason for it.
Go on.
It was one of the first graphical RPGs to come out with its own Linux client.
That's true. It was one of the first to hit Linux, wasn't it?
The actual developers released a Linux client for it directly.
And that's
so
interesting.
It wasn't a third party.
Yeah, that's interesting in and of itself. That BioWare themselves released the Linux client, because I believe for the Mac client, they ported there, they farmed it out to Aspyr Media. I could be wrong on that point, but I think that's what happened.
Yeah, were there any Ultima fan projects that used that engine?
Several.
There were several that were going to. I don't know that any. I think there was an Ultima 4 remake.
There were two separate Ultima 4 projects that were completed using the Neverwinter Nights engine. There was Avatar Hood and U4 Reborn.
Awesome.
They were completed?
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't know either of those had finished.
Oh, yeah. No, they've been out for a long time. U4 Reborn... Avatar Hood was released, and then the developer Zonker basically disappeared from the face of the internet. And then U4 Reborn was released and kind of was just in what state it was. And then later on, Glanistel Dragon and a couple of other guys picked it up and made some additional updates to it. So
maybe Electronic Arts assassinated him.
Well, it's kind of a shame because the last thing I remember Zonker posting on his website was that he was looking at doing an Ultima 5 in Neverwinter Nights, but then that never went anywhere.
Well, I picked up Neverwinter Nights so that I could play various people's things and then never have, so there's another remakey thing to add to my list.
Yep, there you go. And I mean, now we're... Okay, so crossing that 36, 35 barrier, we're starting to get into like the really...
The real meat and potatoes of the list.
Yes, here we go. So now we've got Baldur's Gate coming in at 35. It almost needs no introduction.
And nor does Boo the Space Hamster.
Yes, Boo the Space... Gosh. Go for the eyes, Boo. Paper Mario, the Thousand Year Door at number 34. Okay. Dragon Quest.
An interesting and innovative... like concept of game for the Paper Marios. I haven't played all the way through any of them, but yeah, I'm glad to see it here.
Some mention of it.
It's not really my cup of tea.
Fair enough. Let's see. 33, Dragon Quest V. Wow, we're really getting a lot of Dragon Quest titles on this.
Getting Dragon Quests and Dragon Warriors.
Yes. 32, Ultima 4, Quest of the Avatar. All right, let's see what they write about this, based on given my prediction earlier.
terrible game.
Yeah.
Oh, shoot.
Who writes this stuff? Ultima 4, Quest of the Avatar is the video game as morality play. For perhaps the first time in computer RPG history, here was a game that wasn't about defeating a bad guy or unshackling the world from the yoke of evil, but about learning to embody 8 virtues that made you a better person and thus an inspiration to the surrounding world. Kind-heartedness, not battle prowess, is the true star here. This was revolutionary stuff at the time, and over 3 decades later it remains so. Alas, it's a little rough to get into these days owing to its complexity and sluggish gameplay, but it remains a profound counterpoint to the arguments that RPGs corrupt rather than correct.
I can't really argue that much about complexity and sluggish gameplay.
Yep, it's an exceedingly grindy game.
It should run pretty quick on modern hardware. I don't know what they mean by sluggish.
I think it's not so much the actual pace or the speed of the game, but rather just the pacing and the fact that it is so insanely grindy.
Yeah. Ultima 5 handled combat a little bit better.
Indeed.
Yeah, but I mean... You know, I kind of guessed that it would basically mention the morality aspect of Ultima 4, and there it is. We were saying just before you arrived, Kevin, that on lists like these, it seems that Ultima's contribution has basically been reduced to 3 games. Underworld, 4, and 7, for reasons that you can probably just about predict ahead of time.
Yeah, I would agree with that, except I would add Ultima Online to that for the same reason.
Except I think UO is absent from this list.
UO is absent from this list, but that's wrong. If it was a list of like fantasy games or influential games or something like that, but I don't really see Ultima Online as an RPG. There was no story.
I know, but they put, what the hell, the spaceship game.
EVE Online, right? Yeah.
They did put EVE Online. Although, yeah, EVE...
EVE has a threadbare little story.
EVE does, but what's interesting is that now with broadsword running stuff, I think UO can be argued to have one now, just...
Yeah, well, yeah, because they're starting to get like more in-game events playing. And the world changes periodically. So, yeah, I guess that's true, too. All right.
In any case, I haven't heard from my friend yet, so I'm still here. Let's move on.
Okay, boogieing along. Number 31, Final Fantasy 12.
The fourth Final Fantasy.
All right, well, I guess it's a thing. Number 30, Pokemon Sun and Moon. I have heard a lot of people praise just how good of an RPG the Sun and Moon games are. And I guess I can't really say that, like, because they're not just one game, they're two games, but they're linked, right? So, but anyways, I've heard a lot of people say that they're actually a really excellent RPG. So, lacking the requisite hardware, I haven't had a chance to explore them, but all right. Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate. Now, this one I watched my coworker play a fair bit. And it looks darn fun, I got to admit. Very much in the ARPG vein, but, you know, just, yeah.
Well, I hadn't heard of it, so good to see.
All right. Number 28, Fallout New Vegas. You know, the follow-up to Fallout 3. Another Obsidian game. And, you know, I got to admit, like, of all the Obsidian games on this title, I mean, we had Pillars of Eternity way back when. Like, you know, at 95, was it? But Obsidian really do amazing work when they're like, you know, they take, you know, much the same with the BioWare games, right? You know, like, think of, you know, KOTOR 2, follow-up to KOTOR. Neverwinter Nights 2 and Mask of the Betrayer, follow-up to Neverwinter Nights 1. Fallout New Vegas, follow-up to Fallout 3. Obsidian, for whatever reason, have done exceedingly well doing these follow-up pieces. And, you know, taking the formula that's established by another developer and then just like not necessarily perfecting it, because, you know, claiming that any Obsidian game is perfect isn't necessarily the best way to go about it. Their games do tend to run a little on the buggy side, but just, I don't know, they just open things up and they take the concept that they're given and they run with it and they just make it that much more interesting. You know, like they really have this wild imagination to them that takes each world and makes it just incredibly wider than it was before.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Bloodborne at number 27. So this is also in the Souls series, you know, so we had Demon Souls before, and then I think Dark Souls is later on the list, but Bloodborne is in that same series. A game From Software has made a name for themselves with these titles. I guess what's interesting, I mean, I've not played any of them, but I guess what's interesting about them is the fact that, you know, like they're just punishingly difficult titles to play. And it's nice that, you know, for as much as we sometimes complain that these days games handhold way too much, there are still developers who are willing to, you know, produce content that's a lot more crunchy and a lot more difficult to access and difficult to get through.
Yeah, I guess I don't know very much about what kind of story there might be in these games, because most people I know are just can't get far enough into them to see story.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of the stories are, you know, like fairly basic, world overthrown by demons and you're the last hero, blah, blah, blah. I'm probably simplifying a little bit too much, but, you know, I think they generally all fall into that rough silo. But just the gameplay seems to be where the Souls games, where the Soulsborne games really seem to excel. Because, you know, like the combat system is very, very tight. And in a way, they kind of harken back to roguelikes as well, because it's all, you know, very iterative. You're not going to get through the game with a single character, most likely. You're going to die repeatedly. And then, you know, just kind of keep playing, live, die, repeat, right? Except you're not Tom Cruise. You're...
Or maybe you are. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe you are. Who knows?
Yeah, I hesitate a little bit on, like, thinking of them as RPG, but...
Well, they would fall into the ARPG silo, right? So, Mass Effect at number 26. It's a great game. still one of my favorite. Actually, I think it's still my favorite of the Mass Effects out of all of them.
And a bit of irony from part of the description here is but few, if any, games before had nailed voice acting, facial animations, and character models with such perfection. Yeah.
Well, you know.
And I still love you, Tibby. I really do.
You know, there's a point to be made there, though, because, I mean, certainly this was not the first game that attempted voice acting and facial animations, but certainly it was one of the first games that did it. What's the word I'm looking for? Well? I love Ultima 9. I really, really do. But the voice acting is not up to snuff, and the facial animations are basically just animated TGA textures on a 3D model. So the less said about that, the better.
Indeed.
Number 25, hey, it's the first Elder Scrolls game and possibly the only one on the list. I don't know if any of the others was on here, but Skyrim, I mean, okay, Skyrim, yeah. This, you know, I have to wonder about this, though, because, like, not that Skyrim isn't a good game, and it's huge, it's expansive, and the world is very, you know, it's got the day-night cycles, and it's got the massive area, you know, open world to explore, and it's got all kinds of interesting systems, and the NPCs do interesting stuff. But I know a lot of people who prefer, like, Oblivion or even Morrowind. So I gotta wonder.
Yeah, I played the third and fourth. I prefer the third.
So Morrowind does appear later on this list.
Oh, okay, good.
There's that.
Oh, yeah, there it is. I see it. It's number 21.
Is I mentioned earlier that the Game Informer top 100 list, and it puts Skyrim at number one.
Okay.
I got to wonder about that, too. I'm not so sure about that.
So their number two is this list's number one, so they at least agreed on that being, you know, creme de la creme, but yeah, Skyrim at number one, and most people that I know that have talked about that are kind of looking at it going, okay.
Yeah, it's a good game, but it's not that good.
It's a good game. It is a game that I know people that have literally thousands of hours in, but at that point, they're playing it as an open world sim because they've gotten through all of the game content.
Yeah.
And it is an amazing cross between an RPG and an open world sim. And it also, it has a really, one thing that I haven't seen people really mention that much, but it has a really tight gameplay reward loop. Like the frequency with which you get skill ups and the nice little drum sound effect that you get when it happens is just enough to keep you going to the next one, to make you feel like you're making progress even when you're not doing that much. And I think that's a big part of what gets people to play the game for the first 30 or 40 or 50 hours. the story is there. It's not deep. It's not bad. I haven't played the DLC, but I have played through the entire base game story, and then I put it away because I needed to do other things rather than spend another 100 hours in Skyrim, like possibly, you know, spend another 100 hours doing a new game plus of Persona. But
yeah, well, yeah.
It's groundbreaking. The things that it is groundbreaking in are not the parts of it that are the RPG, which is the reason, I think, why you get such a disparate view on where it belongs on the list.
Maybe that's why. Yeah.
But it's very much a game that it is easy to kind of project yourself into and be able to live there.
Cool.
So,
well, in the spirit of bizarre choices for the number one RPG of all time, I'm going to go ahead and call it for this list without having read it, certain that I'm correct. The number one RPG of all time is Castlevania Symphony of the Night, which realistically probably didn't make the list at all. But it should have.
We will see. We will see. Coming in at number 24.
I will say that you are incorrect about it being number one.
Ah, okay. Well, there you go. Number 24, though. Ultima 7, The Black Gate. Let's see what they say here. Ultima 7, The Black Gate, built on the Ultima series in new, even revolutionary ways that shed the famously clunky UI of previous games to allow more of its refreshingly detailed world to shine through. Instead, checking your inventory or looting happened in pop-up menus, which not only carried into future Ultima titles, but games outside the RPG genre too. Ultima 7 also dropped the strict grid-based approach to movement, introduced dialogue trees, and went real-time. Not to great effect with the combat engine, but that's neither here nor there. Sorry, that was not in the write-up. Its innovations to the format are matched only by its impressive interactivity and the non-linearity of its main plot. You're free to roam around its open world, pick up side quests, forge weapons, bake bread, trademark, hang out in a pub, and even commit crimes. Ultima 7 managed to root itself comfortably in the conventions he'd created, but still had the sophistication to move forward in awesome new ways.
And which ways did it move forward after 7? I'm confused on that point.
Well, Serpentile. We got Serpentile.
Ah, there we go. All right, cool.
Yep. let's see here. System Shock 2 at number 23. Interesting choice. I would lump that more as a shooter than an RPG, but I guess I can see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Final Fantasy 4 at number 22. What are we up to now?
This is the fifth Final Fantasy. fifth or fourth?
I think we might
tell
be
you
fifth.
What the early Final Fantasy games, 1 to 6, were actually fantastic and actually very, very different than the later Final Fantasies. And if you look at, pick any later Final Fantasy and compare it to the earlier ones, they're completely different. So you should not judge Final Fantasy as a single series.
Well, apparently 4 was the one that really went beyond the storytelling of the series to that point and set out to create the more soap opera dynamic that came to characterize the later games.
It absolutely did, but it did it in 16-bit pixel art glory. It was the first Final Fantasy for the Super Nintendo, with the first three being on the NES. And as I mentioned, 7 was the first one for the PlayStation. And really with 7, that was the beginning of the end of it for me, where it just got ridiculous. But
fair enough.
Yeah, the early ones before that should be judged separately.
Good to know. Number 21, The Elder Scrolls 3, Morrowind. So there you go.
Indeed.
Tactics Ogre, Let Us Cling Together at number 20. I have never heard of that one. But nor apparently I. This one focuses on the Yugoslav wars and the Bosnian genocide. So some nice light material.
Indeed.
Earthbound at number 19. You know, what's funny is that I look at the picture from Earthbound and I think, like, I look at the screenshot of Earthbound and I think, oh, hey, it's like another Stardew Valley, except Stardew Valley came out this decade and Earthbound came out in 1995.
Earthbound, I have not managed to go back and play it yet. I've read a lot about it. You can tell how weird and revolutionary it is by the fact that I believe it has the longest write-up of anything on this list.
It's one of the only ones I've seen that's two paragraphs.
Yeah. It does play with some amount of subverting and playing with RPG convention, in as much as, I don't know if it's this one or later in the series, but to win, they ask the player to pray for them.
Interesting.
Yeah, very weird. Very disturbing, very influential, difficult to get into now for similar reasons to Ultima 4 or something. All that said, at some point, I want to set up an emulator and sit down and try to actually get through this because its influence on things cannot be understated, but is mostly in sort of little sideways nudginess.
Gotcha. All right. Getting late here. Let's get through this list. 18, Final Fantasy Tactics. All right.
If you consider it to be part of the series, this is number 6.
Oh, boy.
But it is very different from the others, but it's still, for God's sake, people.
Yeah, it's like, this is getting a little ridiculous. Suikoden 2 at 17. Deus Ex at 16. Again,
I would have thought of it more of it as a shooter. I think we were about to say the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can kind of see why they would lump it in with RPGs just as a, in much the same way that Mass Effect gets lumped in, but definitely Deus Ex does feel and play a little bit more like a shooter. Fallout 2 at number 15. Hard to fault that. Fallout 2 is definitely a hell of an improvement on Fallout 1. KOTOR, Star Wars, Knights of the Old Republic at 14. Excellent game, just amazing. And in many, many respects, you know, like BioWare at their best, having a lot of fun with the Star Wars license. Persona 4 Golden at number 13. Okay, so that's the third Persona game on the list.
It is, like I said at the beginning of the Personas that appeared here, I think they're definitely in the right order. I haven't played the Golden remake because it was only released on a PlayStation Vita, and that was pretty obviously a dead-end platform, so I didn't bother.
Right.
But Persona 4 is one of the only games that I have ever sat down to replay specifically because I wanted to hang out with the NPC during your party again.
Nice. That's a hell of a recommendation.
It's really well written. It's the least dark of the games in any of the Shin Megami Tensei various franchises, you know, sub-franchises. There's an anime of it. It's actually really good and pretty funny, but I recommend playing the games first because it will A, spoil the heck out of things, and B, sometimes they skip over stuff because they figure you'll know it because you probably played the games if you're going to watch the anime.
Gotcha. Good to know. Let's see. Number 12, Dark Souls. Okay.
A lot of Souls entries, given that for each one we've... Yeah, it's somewhat of an RPG, but that's not like the main thing it is. Having three or four of it on the list seems like a bit much, but I mean, I don't know because I haven't actually played them.
Like, Dark Souls really amped up the exploration, but I kind of get the feeling that this is another one where it's on the list because it's meant to kind of stand in for its entire series. Mass Effect 2 at number 11. The only objection I have to Mass Effect 2 is not that it is not an excellent game. It is a genuinely excellent game. My objection is that it is threadbare as an RPG. It is much more a shooter than the first Mass Effect game is, and indeed stripped out the vast majority of the RPG mechanics that Mass Effect 1 had in it.
Yeah, the lines between RPG and non-RPG have been blurred so badly, you know, in the last decade or more. It's almost difficult to tell. It's like, oh, you have stats. Oh, it's an RPG.
You know? But, you know, like, that's the weird thing, because you don't even have... I mean, I guess you kind of have stats in Mass Effect 3, but it's all very hidden. You know, like, it's not at all apparent. Or it's not nearly as apparent as in other RPGs, let's say.
Yeah, so you have something like Baldur's Gate, you know, the quintessential AD&D type game, and then like Deus Ex or whatever. It's like just because you're not constantly killing things doesn't mean it's an RPG. If you can buy something, that doesn't mean it's an RPG. But so this list suffers from that a bit.
A little bit, yes. All right. Well, anyways, let's move on. Number 10, Witcher 3, Wild Hunt. I've dipped my toe into this game a little bit, and I mean, it's pretty great from what I've seen. So, certainly I think the most wide open of the Witcher games, from everything I've heard, it's, you know, really, really quite an engrossing story. Well told, great characters, solid combat, you know, pretty impactful choice mechanics throughout the course of the game. So there you go. I can see why it's on the list. Vagrant Story at number 9. All right. I've never heard of that one. Diablo 2 at number 8. It's a good game. I question the ranking a little bit. Secret of Mana at number 7. Any comment?
Very good. Actually. Very, very good music. Super Nintendo. Excellent game, also.
Awesome. Planescape Torment at number 6. I can see it.
Yes.
Although, I'm curious how World of Warcraft comes in at number 5. I would maybe say these two should be flipped.
That's I would say so. I mean, Planescape Torment can be difficult to get into, and we'll say
more about it if we do have a podcast specifically on it, but one of the deepest RPGs ever made. And so.
Gotcha. As we said, World of Warcraft at number 5. Coming in at number 4, Pokemon Yellow. I have no idea about this game whatsoever.
No.
Yeah. Baldur's Gate 2 at number 3. Okay, I can see it.
I can respect that.
Yep.
Major improvement over the first game.
Yes.
In so many ways, not just in the UI, but also just that in starting higher level means you're not getting one shot.
Fair enough.
Characters that, you know, Baldur's Gate 1 did have Minsk and had great characters, but Baldur's Gate 2 had Minsk and even more great characters. It's the other game that I fired up to, you know, play with the characters again. And then I'm like, well, I'm going to play with different characters than last time. So, but then I'm like, but I can't really have a party without Minsk. And then I wind up with like half the same people again, and it's all weird.
Apparently it was a nightmare to playtest. That's one of the sidebar facts.
Yeah, it's huge. It's just absolutely huge. And so much of it is optional. So much of it is you only even see this if you have this person this time. But crazy. All that stuff's there, and it's just, yeah.
And ironically, you never actually visit the city of Baldur's Gate at any point during the game.
Nope. You left it behind after the first game.
Number 2, Final Fantasy VI.
I love the way you say that, because I am stunned that it actually made it all the way to number 2. And well, slightly just, pleased. I'm more stunned than pleased, but...
I get that it's a good game. I get that. But it's just like we're on that seventh Final Fantasy on this list now.
And that's the thing. So if this, I believe, was number 3 for the Game Informer. So their number 1 was Skyrim, and they're not going to spoil it yet. But, you know, so I haven't played this one. In fact, the only Final Fantasy that I've actually played is 4. I'm definitely interested in giving this one a shot because it does seem to be such a good game. I feel like if you can include 7 different iterations of Final Fantasy on a list and say that that's partially because some of them are so different from others, that same breakdown applies to, for instance, the Ultima series, and maybe we could have slipped Ultima 6 in here somewhere.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm not really sure there wasn't room for Ultima 6 if there was room for 7 Final Fantasy games.
Yeah.
It really comes, like, these kinds of lists really come down to how many of the people making the list were primarily JRPG players and how many were RPG players.
This does feel a bit JRPG heavy.
When were they born? I mean, that's really what these lists are going to come down to.
Yeah, I think as far as Final Fantasy, I agree with you about it. It is absolutely ridiculous that they included that many titles. I think 4 and 6 for sure should have made it. Maybe the first one, simply because it was the first one and it was a very important game. But anything after 6, that's unacceptable. That should not have been in the list.
Interesting. Well, let's see how happy Kevin is with the number 1. Chrono Trigger.
I'm happy, except that it's not Castlevania Symphony of the Night. not only is it not Castlevania Symphony of the Night, but there's not a number 0 that's Castlevania Symphony of the Night. It unfortunately stops at number 1. So damn it. It didn't make the list at all. That's just, I'm gonna hack these people and destroy their servers and post their employees' personal information online.
Boycott IGN. This
does not work for me. Great game though. Chrono Trigger is awesome, and the soundtrack will make you weep. It's just beautiful. Amazing soundtrack.
Nice. 13 unique endings in the game, so how's that for choice and consequence?
Yeah, seeing this on both lists has made me go find my PSP and the damn thing, because it is the other game that I have held on the PSP, the first one being the Persona 3 port. And so, yeah, I'm going to get around to this one, because evidently
I think I'm gonna have to check it out as well.
Kind of good, I hear. So.
Yeah, I might have to check that one out as well. Well, there you go. IGN's top 100 list. Some good stuff. Little Final Fantasy heavy, little JRPG heavy. And, you know, the omission of UO is a little bit glaring, but...
And as y'all mentioned, Ultima 6.
Yeah, that's true, too.
trying to tell me that some Pokemon game is like better than Ultima 6?
Really, I have to wonder.
Negative. Yeah.
Anyways, it is late. I am tired. So, where were we? Right. I am not going to mention any of the other news I have saved up in the queue because, oh my gosh, I have way too much news saved up in the queue. We'll have to do that some other time. If you like...
The next time that we can't get everybody for a podcast, you should do... That's just all of the new...
Yeah, I'll go back to like episode 1 and 2 where it's just me running down all these different stories. anyways, if you like Spam, 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 Humbug, please do consider supporting us on Patreon, patreon.com/UltimaCodex. Obviously, then, you know, your contributions go not only to support, not only towards supporting the podcast, but the Ultima Codex as well. Help pay the server fees. But if a monthly subscription ain't your thing, you can buy your video games at GOG because, hey, you're listening to this podcast, so I hope you like video games, and GOG sells them. But we also accept your moral support. You can like Ultima on Facebook, facebook.com/theUltimaSeries, and you can follow at Ultima Codex on Twitter. Now, if you want to join the Ultima fan community, UDIC.org is your gateway to selecting your very own personalized dragon name. And you can also find the Ultima Dragons. We are on Facebook. We are on Google Plus. You can follow at Ultima Dragons on Twitter. You can join us on our Discord server. And if you really want to get old school, fire a Patilnet client and get yourself over to the Weremount, where at a goodly number of dragons do hang out either some of the time or a lot of the time. And it's just an interesting experience. Well worth checking out if you like that old school vibe. You can also send us feedback here at the podcast, ultimacodex@gmail.com. Send us an email. You can leave us a voice message at podcast.ultimacodex.com. There's just a little link there that'll take you to a webpage where you can record up to 90 seconds of audio. Or you can join us on our Discord server. This is where we record the episodes that you listen to. You're more than welcome to lurk the recordings or just contribute to them if you want to. Alrighty. Boolean, where can we find you online?
You can find me at 8virtues.com. I can listen to my internet radio station there if you like chiptune game music, if you want to buy a Linux PC, and everywhere else. I won't even go through it. I'm there.
Alrighty. Golden Flame, where can we find you?
I hang out on both the UDIC and the Spam, Spam, Spam Discord channels pretty reliably. I'm in the Facebook group, and you can find me also at tapestryofages.com. And at facebook.com/darkunknowngame.
Brilliant. And Jellybear, where do you hide?
I'm on Discord and, of course, the Weremount.
Brilliant. And, of course, you can find me on Twitter at WTF_dragon. I'm on Facebook. I am at ultimacodex.com. I have an about.me splash page. And if you are at all involved with scouting, I run another podcast. That's at scoutingstuffpodcast.com. All right. Well, thank you all for being here and for running down this lengthy list with myself. It's good to finally get an episode recorded. My gosh, 3 tries in, we finally managed to do this. Yes.
Indeed.
Now I'm going to try and actually have this thing published tomorrow. Wish me luck. But until then, and until next time, be virtuous.